This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety. Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 38. To the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm your host, Sean from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
Well, the baby has decided that 45 minutes is all he really needs to sleep anymore. So there's that. Yeah, we're back to that.
Wow. Yeah, that would drive me crazy.
Not fun.
So, adventures in computing. I explained last week that the external USB hard drive that I had crashed and burned, lost all the data on it. That's why we had to re-record episode 36, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I took that hard drive and I put it in the mail and I sent it to Baron. In the meantime, I started trying to use my laptop with the almost full hard drive. You know, and this is crazy. It's not going to work. So I reinstalled Windows. I try to put in Audacity and a few other things, and I've got, of 111 gigs on the hard drive, I've got 3 gigabytes free. I'm like, wow, how big is Windows?
That's not right.
I don't know that. You're right, it's not right.
That's not right.
I don't know that. And I'm like, this really sucks. So we've got like a Tiger Direct outlet store in North Raleigh. I'm like, I'm just going to take it up there. I'm going to see if I can find myself a new external hard drive for a price I can afford. Not a Matsunishi. I get up there and they've got these guys up on their scaffolding yanking the sign that says Tiger Direct off the building.
Oh.
Apparently these people have gone, well, they haven't gone out of business. Tiger Direct still is in business, but the retail chain, you know, the outlet stores are gone.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I go to walk back to the car and this young black kid, 18, 20 maybe, comes hustling up to me. He's like, sir, you need something on your computer? Here. And he hands me a business card. Let me show you where they are. They're right down there. He's pointing to a building. He's like, you see that building? Says that is in that building right there. It was like across the parking lot, across a little street, and in the next parking lot over.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, I don't have anybody else. I mean, I went to Tiger Direct because I didn't have anybody else to go to. Well, okay, sure. Why not? You know, I got to reward some hustle. Like, the kid's got hustle. Once you drum up some business, hand out a business card, sure, why not? I'll give it a try. So I roll in there, and I explain to this guy, I'm like, look, I just reinstalled Windows after hard drive, you know, external hard drive crashed. I've got no space on this thing. I think I need a new, bigger hard drive or something. And he's like, well, how big's your hard drive? And we open it up, it's 111. He's like, wow, that thing's packed. And what have you got on here? I'm like, I've got Windows, I've got Audacity, I've got Chrome, I got an MP3 tag program. And that's basically it. He's like, that's not right. I'm like, well, you know, I reinstalled it and it was, and he's like, the entire install of Windows 7 is like, what, 18 gigs? I forget what number he says, but it was real small.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to 111, it's much smaller than 111, right? He's like, let me take a look. And he's like, and he punches a button and he's like, I think I found your problem. What? He says, well, this folder right here says Windows old. What happens is when you reinstall Windows, it takes the old Windows and puts it in a folder and it's still there. And so far it's saying you have 30 gigs and it's still going up. Like, what? And he says, and you got two of them.
Yeah.
He's like, so, I mean, we know if we can pull some of this stuff off and check and save your data, I'm like, there's nothing in there that I need. Like, just delete it. I mean, I know he's like, yes, I understand. There's nothing in there. I mean, I didn't put anything in there. Anything that was on the computer was on the hard drive. So he deletes it. I have 81 gigs free.
Oh, you know, there are some days where I wonder exactly how you know how to use Skype.
I am not a computer person. I can turn it on. I can turn it off.
Oh.
But, on the hard drive front, Baron just posted something to Facebook. It was a picture of the internals of my drive. Not like, you know, here's a picture of the drive, but like if you were to plug it into a computer and it would show you all like the folders in it.
Yeah.
It was a picture of the folders. He has gotten into it and he is in the process of trying to get it out onto another hard drive. There is every possibility that he will be able to get upwards of 80-90% of this data off that drive.
Well, good.
So all of our archives may come back. Yay. Yeah.
Your soundboards, maybe?
Well, all those little sound snippets.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I mean, I was a little upset we lost the archives for the podcast. I mean, you know, because it's nice to have that. I don't know what for, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So I don't want it to go away. You know, the finished product is the important part, but, you know, the back stuff, I would really like to have it. The things that I was really upset about losing was those little snippets that I had pulled and cut a little sound here, a little phrase here, stuff like that. And all of the meme pictures that I had put on Facebook or taken off of Facebook. It's like those things. I was like, I'll never get that back.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
So a big thanks go out to two people. Number one, Baron, for rescuing what he's managed to rescue so far and hopefully much more off the hard drive. And Walker at PC Max on Capitol Boulevard, Raleigh, who managed to solve the really basic problem of Sean doesn't realize that all that wasted space is his old Windows install. In addition, he did sell me some RAM upgrades, so now I'm running 4 gigs of RAM instead of 2.
That's very, very good for Windows 7.
Yeah.
That's like the minimum I would have for Windows 7 is 4 gigs.
4 is all the computer will tolerate.
Yeah.
Well, the Tactical Dog and Fitness Report. 34.3 dog walking miles, and I got a physical this week.
How was that?
Well, I am over 40, and it's my first physical over 40, and it went right about as well as you would expect.
Oh, that.
All parts present and correct.
Good.
That part's good. apparently, I am too many cookies.
Oh, yeah. Well, me too. So, Tactical Dog went to the vet for her annual physical, right? And rabies shots and all the drugs that she has to get for the year. And she was at 70.5 pounds, which is good, right? So, funny story about that. So, last year, she weighed 65 pounds at her physical. And so, the doc was like, oh, well, we're back up to 70. So, that's probably not good. And I said, oh, well, you know, it was down from like 90. And she goes, yeah, I know. The year before, it was like 92 pounds or something. It's like, no. In like October, she was 90. And Doc looked at me and gave me that, what are you doing, look. I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't really know what's going on. I'm trying to fix it. Yeah.
Well, now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. Now, only a fool learns solely from his own mistakes. The wise man learns from the mistakes of others. Aaron made a pretty serious mistake and wants the rest of us to be wise and learn from it.
Come on! Pony, it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Paulette.
So, Aaron, I understand you did something dumb last week.
I did, Sean, and it's pretty embarrassing to talk about.
Well, if it's so embarrassing, why are you bringing it up?
Because I want people to learn from my mistakes so that it doesn't happen to them. You know the old saying, maybe your purpose in life is to serve as a warning to others? While I don't feel that's exactly my calling, I do consider myself to be a useful idiot. And I know there are political connotations to that. I don't mean it in that regard. I mean that if it will work for me, someone without a lot of training, then it really ought to work for you. And if I make idiotic mistakes, then I want someone to profit from them so I don't feel quite so stupid for making them. And that's basically the entire premise of my articles on the Blue Collar Prepping blog. I make it plain that I'm still figuring things out, and if I'm going to make mistakes, then I might as well own up to them.
Okay, so what's the dumb thing you did?
Do you remember the DEA agent who said he was the only person in the room professional enough to own a Glock, and then he shot himself in the foot? Well, mine was similar, only not quite so bad. I was demonstrating to someone why knives without cross guards or finger stops are dangerous. Because if you poke the knife into something that gives resistance, then your hand can slip forward like so and oh sh**. So yeah, it was a pretty effective demonstration, and I cut myself pretty badly. Not go to the emergency room bad, but oh crap, I'm bleeding all over the place bad.
So the moral of this segment is, don't use a knife without a cross guard?
Oh, that was the moral of the YouTube video I made last week, and I encourage everyone to watch it as it's quite short and informative, but that's not the purpose of this segment.
Well then, what is the moral?
The moral is, always have bandages, gauze, and tape ready for use in the front of the medicine cabinet. Now, I realize this sounds like a big, well, duh, and it is, but it's likely that a lot of listeners have let their bandages get pushed to the back of the cabinet in favor of things like aspirin and antacid. This is how you should organize your medicine cabinet. As a general rule, if you're not in a hurry to get it, then it shouldn't be near the front. It will not make a difference if you need to take a few more seconds to reach past the bandages to get the aspirin in the back. However, if you're bleeding like a stuck pig, especially if it's your hand that's bleeding and you're applying pressure to the wound with the other hand, then you really want those bandages up front where you don't have to dig for them. Now, another good trick is to open up the boxes of those band-aids, take the bandages out, and fold the flaps down into the box before putting the band-aids back. This keeps the bandages organized, and if you have many types, you can see which ones are which by looking at the box, but you won't have to fumble with opening a box while you're bleeding. Now, in the show notes, I've attached a photo of my newly organized boo-boo kit. That would be the technical term, as it's different from a trauma kit, which I also own and have blogged about, and I will give a brief listing of what I have and where. In front, because they're too big to fit in the shoebox organizer, is a package of Curlix rolls and some stretch tape. Now, the tape has been opened. It's just sitting inside the package to keep it clean and organized. These items are good for covering up burns and road rash, and also acting as a secondary dressing. In the first row of the box are a quick clotting agent and medical tape with scissors. Also present are a tube of antibiotic ointment and spray bandage, and these are in front because they might be hidden by other things if I put them further back. Immediately behind this are a box of hospital-grade gauze pads, triple-layer nonstick pads, and assorted oh crap that's a big wound compresses. Behind that is a bottle of antiseptic wash for minor cuts that might get infected, and then your regular boxes of band-aids in various shapes, sizes, and colors. Some are clear, some are flesh tone, some are water blocking, some are for fingertips and knuckles, etc. And so that's my setup for minor injuries. I understand that readers may have a different setup, and that's fine, whatever works for them. But my point is, you need to put thought into how you're organizing the first aid components of your medicine kit. And just for interest, I'm also including a link to a blog post where I talk about the trauma kit I have for larger messes, like if someone in my family gets shot.
Sounds like a good setup, Aaron. Thanks for sharing that with us. See you again next week.
Thanks, Sean. See you next week.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com.
And yep, I just checked, and my bandages are in the back, and my aspirin and NyQuil's in the front.
I don't have a medicine cabinet.
Oh, at least I'm a leg up on you then, I guess.
My wife has a couple of boxes. There's one is like the bandage box, and one is the drug box. They're plastic boxes. If I'm bleeding like that, I'm going for a towel. I'm probably going to have to wash my bath towel.
Yeah, all my towels are white, so there's that.
Felons behaving badly. Man arrested and charged for stealing vehicle with child inside.
Oh, boy.
Rowan County Police arrested a man for stealing a car with a 3-year-old child inside from the parking lot of a convenience store on early Wednesday. The car was recovered about a mile away from the crime scene, and the child was not harmed. 20-year-old suspect was put in Rowan County Jail after being arrested on Friday. According to the police, the father in Salisbury had stopped at the 1800 block of West Innis Street Pop Shop store right after midnight to get lottery tickets and cigarettes. He got out of his Ford Escape and left the doors unlocked and the engine running with a child in the car to go into the store.
Can we talk about all of the things that are wrong with that sentence?
I don't think we have time.
Okay.
A man then jumped into the vehicle and drove off. The father of the child and a store worker ran out of the pop shop to chase after the vehicle. Shortly after, police received a call from a woman reporting a suspicious Ford Escape in front of her Tabernacle Street home. Responding, police retrieved the car with a child inside. Suspect has been charged with larceny of a motor vehicle and kidnapping. He was jailed on $500,000 bail.
And as the father of a three-year-old, let me tell you, I'm surprised the guy made it a mile before he bailed. I want a cookie. I want water. I want milk. What are you doing?
So what kind of person do you figure steals a car without bothering to check if there's a three-year-old in the back first?
I don't know.
Somebody who makes a lot of bad decisions, I think.
Yeah.
Common law robbery, 1-5-2011, felon class G. Simple assault affray, 7-9-2011, misdemeanor class 2. Common law robbery attempted, 11-5-2012, felon class H. Possessed schedule 2-4-2-14, felon class I. Hit and run, 11-8-2014, misdemeanor class 1. And operate a vehicle without a license, 11-8-14, misdemeanor class 3.
And if you do the math, that means he started when he was 14 or 15.
Yep, and this doesn't include the fact that he is, if I'm reading it correctly, something like 3 probation revocation go back to jails.
Okay, why would you put him on probation again after he'd already previously had it revoked?
I think what happens is they give you a certain amount of time in jail on a revocation. So it's like, here, you get another 3 months. Maybe that'll teach you a lesson. And then after that, then they okay, well, 3 didn't do it. We'll give you 6. I didn't look at the numbers, and it's kind of hard to tell, but that's how they do it. They don't just revoke it and send you back to jail for infinity.
Well, shouldn't they send you back to jail for like the rest of your time and not put you back on probation, just release you?
It really depends on what you did.
Okay.
If you shot somebody, then yeah, you go back to jail for the rest of your time. If you refuse to get a job when your probation officer told you to, you get 2 weeks in jail to think about yourself.
Interesting.
Well, Nikki's on assignment and will return next week. Strange laws. Do you guys have right red arrows in Tennessee? Have you ever seen this thing?
I think I have. There might be a couple in like Memphis or something. I don't know.
It's apparently a North Carolina thing. I don't know if I've ever seen it anywhere else, but it's one of those things that I've run into here that will get you in trouble. Everybody knows you roll up to a circular red light.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a right after a full stop if it's clear on a road that offers you the ability to turn right. Obviously, you can't go right on a one-way the wrong
right,
way, obviously.
Right.
You are not allowed to make a right on a red arrow, a right red arrow. This is one of those ignored about as much as the speed limit is.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think this is GS20-158 sub B sub 2A. Guidance. No vehicle shall make a right turn on a, quote, red circular light, unquote, if the movement is prohibited by an appropriate sign. So, right turn on red unless there's a sign that says no right turn on red.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Everybody knows that. Next one is no vehicle shall make a right turn at a red arrow unless the movement is allowed by an appropriate sign. So the presumption is no right turn on red at all unless it says go ahead and make the right turn on red. But that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
No, that seems dumb.
I've only actually seen a right arrow with a sign permitting in one place. It's US 1 South at 64 West. There's a double exit ramp that can only turn right. And I think it has 3 arrows, a green right arrow, a yellow right arrow, and a red right arrow. They don't have circular lights because the only way you can turn is right. So I think the reason it's there is a reminder that the only way you can possibly turn is right. And it does have a big sign that says right turn on red arrow permitted after stop.
Oh, interesting.
It's important to note if you come to North Carolina that right red arrow means stop, don't move. And the guy beeping his horn behind you, just because he doesn't know that, doesn't mean that it's right to do it.
Right.
Well, all good things must come to an end, and podcasting is no different. Today we say goodbye to Miguel Gonzalez, our friend and contributor. Miguel stuck it out for 35-plus episodes of Our Crazy, but he's decided that podcasting is just not for him.
Yeah, I can't really blame him. This is a lot of work, and none of us are getting rich here. Well, the Pilatus PC-12 notwithstanding.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I know. Most of us put in an hour or two, and you put in like 86 hours a week.
Oh, it's more like 20, really. Editing's hard.
Well, yes.
Miguel, you'll always be welcomed back. If not as a regular contributor, At least as an occasional special guest. Please?
Get more Miguel Daily at gunfreezone.net.
And now it's time for Kelly Grayson, who, wearing his action-adventure EMS pants, transforms into ambulance driver, a trauma-fighting superhero who prowls the seamy underbelly of the city in search of little old ladies who've fallen and can't get up. In a little segment we like to call...
This One Time?
Well, I'd like to welcome paramedic, medical trainer, internet raconteur, and all-around fun guy, the ambulance driver, Kelly Grayson. How are you, Kelly?
I'm fine, Sean. How are you today?
I'm doing all right.
It's good to be on the show.
Well, Kelly, you've been a paramaniac for a long time, so I bet you've got a good story or two.
Yep, I've got a few. I'll tell you one. So there I was, responding paramedic on, as far as I know, the only double fatality ostrich attack that has ever happened. We get a call for two people down, injured, unknown status in a cow pasture somewhere. And we're rushing to the scene. I'm in a supervisor sprint vehicle and following the ambulance there, and get some advisories from 911 dispatch en route that have some erroneous information in them. But when we arrive, we find two people, an elderly couple, lying in this cattle paddock. One of them is dead, and the other one is dead but doesn't know it yet. The man, elderly man, is lying there face down. He's wearing one of these denim quilted jackets that has a rip in the back that is gapped open. You can see through his jacket and his overalls and his shirt where there's a gash in his back that you can literally see his ribs and his spine through. There's an ear torn off, and he's dead. He's bled out into the soil. And his wife is lying next to him, and she's in pretty bad shape. She's scuffed up. She's got scratches and claw marks all over and numerous small lacerations. One of her breasts is partially avulsed, and she is decorticate posturing, and that's a medical condition where your muscles kind of tense up and flex in response to an ominous brain injury. So she's here doing this, and we're working to get her stabilized. We've working on getting her immobilized on a board and getting her airway secured. And as I'm getting ready to intubate this woman to put a breathing tube down her throat, I asked the sheriff's deputies on scene. I said, "What happened to these people?" And the one sheriff's deputy, the shift sergeant, just clicks on his streamlight and points it out into the pasture and says, "That's what happened to them." And I look out there, and there is about an 8-foot-tall, close to 300-pound rooster ostrich out in the field, and he is very curious as to the goings on. He's watching this, and he doesn't know quite what to make of it. But in the glare of the streamlight, this ostrich is wet with blood from the knees down. The couple's son had bought the ostrich and was about to buy a hen and start a breeding pair and start his own ostrich farm. Well, this ostrich had attacked the elderly woman when she was out there feeding calves in the paddock. And the old man tried to beat it off with his cane, and it turned on him and killed him. So we're sitting there trying to get this lady packaged for transport, and we've almost got her strapped down. I've got her airway secured. I've got a cervical collar on her. We're about to pick her up on the spine board when I hear the ominous sound, unmistakable sound of 6 Glocks being pulled out of retention holsters all at once. And I looked up, and there's this ostrich about 10 feet away, and he's in a threat display. His wings are puffed out, and he's ducking his head and stamping his feet, and all the deputies are drawn down on him. And I discovered an important fact about myself that day. I discovered that if you hand me a charcoal briquette, I can hand you back a diamond as long as you're not really particular about where it's been. And I said very calmly, I think, "Will someone shoot that thing?" And just as calmly, the shift sergeant, looking over the sights of his Glock at this bird, said, "We can't shoot him. He's not a threat."
So, he's not a threat?
Yeah, I'm gonna pause and let you absorb that for a moment. I'm looking at the lady and the man, looking up at the shift sergeant, gesturing to each of them like, okay, is this not proof positive of a threat? And Steve, the shift sergeant, says, just get her on the board and slide her out of here behind us, and if the bird charges, we'll take him down. So we do exactly that. We load the lady into the ambulance. I get a couple of IVs in her. We pour some fluid in her to prop her blood pressure up, which was starting to fail. And we boogie as fast as we can to South Arkansas General Medical Center, Nail Salon, Tower Repair, and Crawfish Hut. And call in a trauma alert. And when we arrive at the hospital, there's as close to being a trauma team as you can find at a small rural hospital. The doctor and a couple of nurses and a respiratory therapist and x-ray tech, and you know, there's a team of people awaiting us. And we bring the lady in, and as we shift her over, I give my handoff report. I said, Doc, it was a 2-fatality ostrich attack. There's one dead on scene. This lady who's got a left breast avulsed, that we've bandaged that, and there's minimal bleeding noted from it. She was decorticate posturing on scene with the vital signs of such and such, and I intubated her with a 7.5 tube. It's 22 centimeters at the lip line, and her vital signs were thus, and I've given her 2 liters of fluid, and now her vital signs are thus, and she was decorticate posturing at scene, but now she's flaccid. And he's kind of halfway listening to all this, and kind of looking over his glasses, peering at her, at these defensive wounds on her forearms and hands, kind of halfway listening, and he just nods, and he said, I don't know. So I paused for a minute. I said, okay, I'll bite. What don't you know? And he said, no, I'm listening. I understand what you're telling me. He said, this just doesn't look like any ostrich attack I've ever seen. Yeah. So I, you know, and it's like the screeching record. All conversation in the room stops, and then the giggles start, and the entire room, me, my crew, my partner who rode in with us, we're all laughing, and the doc doesn't get it. He doesn't see what he said that's so funny. And my partner, Bodie, who is born and raised in, hand to God now, Possum Valley, Arkansas, who is about as country as grits and collard greens, says, Doc, no offense now, but just how many ostrich attacks have you seen? And the doc realized what he'd said, and he said, well, I meant to say this doesn't look like an animal attack. And Bodie just kind of chuckled and said, well, that's good, because I deer hunt up in this neck of the woods, and I'd kind of like to know what caliber for marauding ostrich I need to have. So the doc just ushered us from the room, shooed us away. We go back into service, and I ride with the ambulance crew back to the scene to pick up my sprint vehicle. And when we arrive there, there are 6 very shaken sheriff's deputies and 1 dead ostrich. And the shift sergeant is sitting on the tailgate of his SUV, and he's just sitting there, and he is shaking like a dog crapping peach seeds. And the one of the reserve deputies, who looks like he's about 14 years old, is clutching the Remington 870 riot gun so hard, and he's shaking so bad you can hear the slide rattle. And I said, Steve, what happened? He said, well, we got authorization to take the bird down, and I went out there to destroy the animal, and I shot him twice, 40 caliber hollow points, and it just pissed him off. and then the little reserve deputy chimes in. He says, I had to take him down with the riot gun twice, shot him twice. So yeah, he walks out and draws down on this bird and shoots it in the breast, bam bam, double tapped it in the breast, and the bird just lowered its head and ran at him. And the deputy, lucky for him, was standing behind Steve, and he took this bird down with 2 rounds, 2 3-inch magnum double-aught buck, boom boom. And one of the buckshot hit the bird in the head as it lowered its head, and it literally skidded to a stop about 6 feet away. And they're all recovering from the anguish and trauma of seeing this happen, trying to clean out their underwear, and I just walk over and casually prod the bird with my foot and said, well, I don't know about you guys, but I've got dibs on the drumsticks. And that is my story of, as far as I know, the only fatal ostrich attack that EMS has ever worked.
All right, Kelly, it was good to talk with you. See you again soon.
It was great to talk with you, Sean, and you guys keep the rubber on the road, and if you see me coming in your rearview mirror, slow down and pull to the right, please.
Ride along with Kelly at his blog, theambulancedriverfiles.com, and pick up his book, A Paramedic Story, Life, Death, and Everything in Between, available at amazon.com. Fun with headlines!
All right, I'm going to go ahead and start this off by saying I might have gotten a little overzealous with this one.
Okay.
Okay, so this week's comes from the firearm blog, Glock demanding customer private info.
What were they thinking here?
Yeah, so apparently there was a store in Pennsylvania that they got audited by Glock for their Blue Label program. The Blue Label program is basically where they give $75 to $100 off of particular Glocks that like come with an extra magazine and all that stuff. But you have to be law enforcement or military, and you have to show your ID and fill out all this paperwork for the Blue Label program. What I had thought was going on was that this store had refused to provide information that it was required to give to Glock in order to stay in the Blue Label program, because they had been audited for the first time. And when Glock said, okay, well, we need to see the 4473s, the gun store was like, nope, you're not going to see that. So I was like, well, that's kind of something fishy there, you know, because I'm sure that there's something in their contract that says they have to show that if asked.
Right.
But you and I were talking about this, and you actually pointed out that it's illegal in Pennsylvania for them to give Glock that information.
The company is called Trop Gun, and Trop Gun is represented by Prince Law Offices PC in Pennsylvania. Now, basically, if it applies to gun laws and Pennsylvania, and Prince says it is so, then generally it is so. They are very highly regarded. Prince Law is really top shelf. If you get in trouble and need a lawyer on gun things in Pennsylvania, Prince Law are the people you go to first.
And I have heard of them even down here.
Right, they're pretty savvy social media-wise.
Yeah.
They're very political as well. So, I mean, they're not just in it to make a couple of bucks. I mean, they're like big-time believers in our rights. Here's the thing. Pennsylvania Crimes Code says that potential purchaser, transferee, or applicant, all their personal data is confidential and shall be confidential, not subject to public disclosure. So, basically, Trop Guns is prohibited by law from handing over any of this personal information over who bought the gun or who tried to buy a gun even.
Right.
So they're stuck on that side. Here's the problem I have with this story, and I followed it when it happened. Why was Glock there in the first place saying, show us who bought these guns?
And Glock wasn't demanding to know who bought every Glock, just the ones on the Blue Label program.
Right. So what is your thoughts? What do you think is going on here?
Again, I don't know the whole story, but just my suspicion is that Glock went into their accounting and basically said, these guys sell way too many Blue Label guns. We think that there may be something fishy.
I had heard somewhere, and this is complete rumor mill. It could be people making crap up on the internet. It could be something I thought I heard and I really didn't hear. But that they were selling a lot more than other people, and that triggered Glock to say, hey, we need to investigate. Because if you're getting a gun from Glock that is $50 or $100, whatever it is, cheaper, and you sell it at full price and then claim that you sold it to a police officer and pocket the difference, that's fraud. Well, if you sell those Blue Label guns that you got at a discount to people who didn't qualify, then that's fraud too, mm-hmm. taking money away from Glock. So what they were trying to prove was that these people were defrauding Glock. Unfortunately, it kind of looks like they don't have a way to do that without violating Pennsylvania law.
And again, we don't know exactly what's going on here.
Nope.
Conveniently, for everybody involved, it's not legal for us to find out.
Yep.
So, yep. You know, I think the best possible outcome here is that, you know, Trop Guns is not going to be able to sell Blue Label Glocks anymore. And what may come out of this is nobody in Pennsylvania will be able to buy a Blue Label Glock.
Yep, could get that way.
Several of the commenters on this story kind of suggested the same thing that you and I were suggesting or made that assumption. A couple other people said, hey, well, remember there was that straw purchase thing and that involved a Blue Label purchase in Pennsylvania. Maybe Glock is going back and just auditing all the Pennsylvania stores.
We can't possibly know, and we certainly don't want to leave you with the impression that we think there is something wrong going on. Obviously, Glock felt that they had a reason. Whether that was a good reason or a bad reason is entirely up to them to decide. But there are legitimate reasons why you would want to audit this program. And some of those reasons are that people could be defrauding your company. And I think it's a legitimate business reason for them to audit, but they are kind of stuck there, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. They probably should have done some more legal investigation on the front end.
Well, when you deal with 50 states and 50 different laws, you can understand why
sometimes you miss something.
Yeah, I mean, heck, try carrying a gun in a different state and see what happens.
Oh, man, yeah.
Cross the river from Pennsylvania and see what happens to you.
Nope, no thank you.
Well, this week, Baron wants to talk to us about a really bad exploit that somebody found in those drug pumps that you get in hospitals in
Tech Tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech Tips with the Baron.
Well, hey, Baron, how are you doing?
I've been better, Sean. You're not going to believe this. This is definitely on my list of things that piss off Baron. You know those drug pumps in the hospital?
Yeah, I had family who was in the hospital after surgery, and they had those pumps. They pumped morphine into her back.
Yep, I had the same thing after my car wreck. And it ends up that unbelievably easy to get into is the understatement of the century. I am quoting directly from an article here real quick. By default, this device comes configured with an IP address that is easily discoverable by attaching to the Ethernet port on the back of the device and configuring your laptop, or even a little itty-bitty device attack tool, you could easily extract the wireless encryption keys stored in plain text on the device. An attacker with physical access, e.g. any patient or anyone visiting any patient, can instantly recover the keys to the life-critical network. Once attached wirelessly to the life-critical network, an attacker has complete control of all the drug pumps in the hospital.
All right, let me see if I understand this. If you just plug into it, it's not really even hacking at this point. If you just plug into this drug pump, you can discover the password for the hospital's secret Wi-Fi, basically. And then from there, you can run all of the pumps remotely.
That is correct.
Oh, well, imagine the dangers there.
For those who have any sort of tech knowledge, let me just put it this way. Remote root shell access over Telnet. I swear I moved back to 1990. I get over time that systems grow, they become more complicated in size, we have issues with authentication, but there are some things that just shouldn't really pass, and the thing that scares me the most was watching a guy in the comments of this article that I found writing up all of the problems with this device, trying to justify how it was okay. No, it's not okay. It is not low risk. This is extremely high risk, and it is doubly high risk given the consequences. And the consequences we are discussing here is the cost of human life. And that is something that we should not be sitting here going, oh, well, it's a rare event. I'm sorry, but if you know there's a problem and you refuse to fix it, or you don't even want to address it to begin with, that's negligence. Any jury in the world will come after you for negligence. And to the guy who thinks this isn't really a big deal, let's just play a mental scenario game. Let's say there's person X who has done something very nasty, and I think he should be removed from the gene pool with prejudice, but I'd like to do so without getting caught. Person X is going into surgery next week and will be there for a couple days afterwards post-op. I have determined via the intel I got that his surgery is going to require a morphine drip. I now walk into the hospital and pretend to visit a family member or friend, air quotes around that, who just happens to be sleeping. I walk over to their pump, plug my little Arduino into the back of there, sniff and yank all the files off, and walk right back out. No one knows that I've been there at this point. I then connect to the wireless network and proceed to do a couple different things. One, I could write malware that would cause every device on the network to go ballistic in the middle of the night, and everyone who's on a drip machine, whether it be for insulin, morphine, whatever drug they're on, all of a sudden it just goes to the max drip rate and pumps everything it can into them. Downside is, you're going to have massive collateral damage. Upshot is you will overwhelm the hospital staff to the point where they're not going to be able to save everyone. This is going to get investigated pretty heavily. You could get caught, but if you were smart, you're probably not going to because, well, you didn't leave any tracks, right? The other options, though, you could probe the network in advance and see what devices are online, and then the day of, see what new devices came online. What's there now that wasn't there before? Just take those offline. You'll take some additional admittance that weren't associated, but hey, it's a lot better than the whole hospital. Lastly, you could go and search through every device and see if you could actually find any patient information if, say, there's a name of the individual the pump's assigned to. And if you find that, oh, look, I now have a scalpel and I can take out just that individual. Yeah, there's a couple other little bits. They check vitals regularly, but do it right. They won't notice for at least 30 minutes. Life is good. Well, for you anyway, not for the particular target. I've said it over and over and over again that we need to think about security from the beginning. Here's what happens when you don't even really think about security and you just really don't even implement it at all. And the other thing we need to do is when somebody finds something, don't dismiss it or otherwise you just really look like an idiot.
All right, Baron. It was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org.
So one more thing that's not mentioned in the article or any of that is that a lot of times these hospital systems have further authentication methods than what you initially think. So I think that this probably is a theoretical attack, but may not actually work the way that it's described. Most of the hospitals that I have worked with would not allow something with a Wi-Fi card in it to be even turned on in a situation like this. Yeah, this is a problem if they're widely deployed, but I'm not sure that that's actually the case.
The J-Block. Interesting week this week at the NC General Assembly. Bloomberg's really all in on this gun control thing. He is funding, it looks to me like, three different groups here in North Carolina. I know he's funding Moms Demand Action, which is a subunit of Mayors Against Illegal Guns. You know, Every Town for Gun Safety. Same thing, same thing, same thing. Two other groups showed up at the NC General Assembly to protest this House Bill 562, which is this year's omnibus gun legislation. The three groups were Moms Demand Action, North Carolinians Against Gun Violence, which I pointed out on my blog a while back, was taken over by the former state coordinator of Moms Demand Action.
Yeah.
You figure pretty much you saw what happened there.
Right.
And another group that's nobody knows about, except they keep showing up around here, Moms Rising. Well, one of the things that they did was they did a literature drop. A lit drop is when you print up a packet and you hand it out to each of the General Assembly members, you know, the representative senators that you meet. Here's our position paper. They accept it and they say, oh, that's great. Thank you very much. And then they throw it in the trash. And I was looking through it and Moms Rising had this, I wish you guys could see this. Now is the time to pass common sense gun safety policies, a selection of Moms Rising gun violence stories, a little candle. You know what good candles are.
Mm-hmm.
Mothers know best. Moms Rising members share their own experiences and thoughts about how gun violence has impacted their families and communities. So you see where this is going to go, right? And there's a bunch of stories.
I have lived in Sweden on and off over the past 30 years, during which time only 2 people died due to gun violence. However, here in the US, the numbers are astronomical. In our own quiet suburban neighborhood, a 4-year-old child shot himself with a gun he found in the glove compartment of the car of a 20-year-old who was visiting the family.
Only 2 people in Sweden died due to gun violence in the past 30 years? I don't think that. And I should look that up. And I found an article. Swedish murder rate spikes in 2013. That's within the last 30 years?
Yes.
The opening paragraph. Last year testified to an upswing in deadly violence. New crime statistics revealed on Monday as 87 people lost their lives to violence in Sweden compared to 68 the year before. Almost 1 in 3 was shot. Now, I've got a question for you. If I take 83 and divide it by almost 1 in 3, would the resulting number be more or less than 2?
Hang on, I gotta pull up my watch on the calculator thing. More than two in 1 year, and there were 30 years in the story, so how about no?
And later in the story it says, the number of cases of deadly violence shows a relatively large up and down swings between the years, and has in the past 10-year period fluctuated between 68 and 111. In the longer perspective, deadly violence shows a downward trend. So in a downward trend, we have one third of 87 in 2013. So figure the violence rate must have been higher in order to give it a downward trend.
Right.
Right. So, okay, we can just skip her. The next one is, I think, is pretty funny. We're only going to read two. Today is the second year anniversary of the suicide of a dear friend of mine. Even though he was a convicted felon, he somehow got a gun. Maybe if it had been a little harder for him to get the gun, something would have intervened to prevent his taking his own life. I strongly support background checks and really enforcing penalties on those who sell guns to people who should not have them. I also support limiting the size of ammunition clips.
Well, I kind of agree with that. How large are Garand clips? 8 rounds? Yeah, that really should be limited to 7. Yeah. Because, you know, Garand thumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many in this magazine lady, how many did this convicted felon shoot himself with? Was it the 11th round, the 12th that killed him? Or was it the first? And if a convicted felon got himself a gun to kill himself, I mean, this is dedication here. You think one more law is going to change that?
Well, only if it was illegaler. If it was just illegaler, then yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of really great ones in here. I wish I could have the time to just sit here. We could do an entire hour's episode just going back and forth reading this garbage. And it is, we shouldn't have assault-style weapons meant for the military in combat. What struck me about this when I was reading it was the grammatical incorrectness of it. The spelling was correct, I guess, because when they typed it in, spell check fixed it. But they thought this was good political theater, that they could hand these out, and it was just bad writing. It was horrible writing. They didn't edit it. They didn't correct the grammar. They didn't do anything with it. They just like, oh, we'll just spit it out there. Maybe they realized nobody was going to read it anyway except for you and me. But they got handed these stories, and reasonable people, at least they think they're reasonable people, listened to this, read this, and said, oh yeah, totally, let's give that to, yeah, that's,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
I mean, this doesn't show a bunch of people in dire need of medication. No, this shows reasonable mothers wanting reasonable thing. No, that's not what it says to me.
No.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Are you serious about self-defense? Do you carry a gun? Do you know the law? What good is defending your life with a gun if your own ignorance of the law means you will spend the rest of your life in a prison cell? Do you want to go home safe to your family or off to the chain gang? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety and sign up for one of Andrew Branca's Law of Self-Defense seminars. I've taken the in-person seminar and it was eye-opening. Like Mark Twain says, it ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so. But Andrew of lawofselfdefense.com is ready to teach you the truth. What the law says, what the relevant legal rulings say, what the jury instructions say. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety and sign up now for a seminar, online or in person. Use discount code VARIETY at checkout and get 10% off everything. That's lawofselfdefense.com/variety and use discount code VARIETY at checkout.
And don't forget that we're still accepting donations at gofundme.com/gunblogvarietycast. Every little bit helps towards getting us some better audio equipment. And a big thank you to the people who've given already, because that money went to fixing my computer.
Which we needed.
We needed. Oh my goodness. Well, this week, Weird talks about how the anti-gunners don't seem to want to debate anybody. And when they do debate somebody, they get their butts handed to them. In this week in anti-gun nuttery. Well, hey Weird, what's going on in the anti-gun world this week?
So I read this really neat headline that one of Michael Bloomberg's lackeys was going to refuse to debate with Dr. John Lott.
Well, why would he do that?
Maybe because John Lott knows what he's talking about.
He'd get his butt handed to him.
You gotta hear this quote. When there's a credible scientist, someone who wants to have a real constructive conversation about this, we're going to be there. Researcher Ted Alcorn said, But folks who seek to minimize the issue of gun violence, the grave issue of gun violence in this country, or to draw attention away from the real issues to themselves, that is not a conversation that I think is productive to be part of. I think he's really laying it out kind of as the no true Scotsman fallacy.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, where someone says, oh, you know, all Scotsmen wear kilts. And someone goes, well, I'm Scottish and I don't wear a kilt. Well, then you're not a true Scotsman. We only want to talk with a credible scientist, and a credible scientist is one that's gonna say, "Bad guns!" Also, let's be fair, Mr. Alcorn isn't a scientist himself.
Wait a minute. He's only gonna talk to credible scientists? He's not even a scientist himself?
Yeah, overall, he's pretty much a filmmaker and a consultant and a reporter. There's not really any hard science in his background at all.
Well, he was a junior fellow at the United Nations University. Ooh. And a researcher for Johns Hopkins Center for Water and Health.
But remember, John Lott, who's got a PhD as an economist, yeah, he's not a real scientist.
Yeah.
He doesn't know anything about numbers.
Nothing.
This reminds me of some of the debates I've had face-to-face with people here in Massachusetts who favor gun control. As a general rule, I find that you don't actually get into a lot of debates in the real sense of the word. You get a lot of people where they'll state their opinion, you'll give your, you know, well-thought-out rebuttal, and at this point in time, it's, you know, so polished, it's just been used so many times that I don't even need to think about it. And you'll get four possible responses. You'll get the kind of person that goes away with some skepticism and some curiosity, and they look up the information, and they go, oh, that's not what I was standing for. That would be what I was back when I used to be an anti-gunner, is got my butt handed to me a couple times by some pro-gun people, and then I went and looked up the information because I wanted to show them, and I found out, oh, that's not how it works. You've got the people who have invested way too much of their ego into the whole gun control thing, and so they just simply ignore that there was ever a rebuttal at all. And then you get the people that just realize, oh, this is a complicated issue. That sounds like work. And they never venture into the field again. And of course, the last kind is the kind that seems to be pretty prevalent on Twitter, which is they just change the subject and start hurling insults at you.
Yeah, familiar with that bunch.
Most of the big name anti-gunners simply avoid debates at all costs. They run websites with no way to have a public discussion. They run blogs with closed or heavily moderated comments. They block people from their Twitter feed. Pretty much they just do whatever they can just to be talking to people that agree with them. Now, there's one pair out there who do engage in debates. Evan DeFilippis and Devin Hughes from Armed With Reason. Now, I got a link here where they picked a fight with John Lott. It's a half-hour video. It's well worth your time. Essentially, Dr. Lott just really tears him apart, gets into backpedal, and essentially he's doing exactly what I've said before, changing the subject. He doesn't stick to any one topic, doesn't get it going. The only thing that he really got doing was he got Dr. Lott to point out that maybe it isn't concrete that more guns is less crime. It's really more guns does not equal more crime. And so because there was this minor concession, he won! Yay! Defeated John Lott. He's a liar and a cheat. The one that was even better was they decided to pick a fight with Gary Kleck, who's a fairly famous criminologist. The problem was Kleck responded.
The authors, a couple of Oklahoma investment counselors with no graduate degrees, do not claim to have had any training in survey research methods. Like Hemingway, who was also untrained in survey methods, they believe it's perfectly plausible that surveys generate enormous overestimates of crime-related experiences, as if this were the most commonplace thing in the world. The reality that survey experts are familiar with, however, is that surveys of the general public simply do not overestimate crime-related experiences.
Now, some claim that he's being a little bit nasty here and doing an appeal to authority where he's talking about how underqualified they are compared to him. But I'll note that every post that these guys do on their blog, they end with their CV of all of their credentials, and any debate you have with them, they do the appeal to authority. They're always talking about how they're the smartest people in the room. This was just devastating. Now, of course, I got a link to them again claiming that they won that debate too. But what's interesting is the first fight that they picked was on Politico, and Kleck responded in Politico. But this one's just on their blog. They didn't really want to go back into the same arena. You think that's a coincidence?
No, not really.
Just for some personal experience, I had some contact with Evan when he contacted me because I said that I was interested in debating him before this all went down. And oddly enough, we drew out the lines of how the debate would be conducted, and then he disappeared.
He couldn't control how the debate was going to go, so he took his ball and went home.
Exactly. In the end, I'm glad because I'd much rather John Lott give him that dusting up than I would. I probably would have won the debate, but Dr. Lott turned it into an art form.
If any of our listeners have never heard John Lott speak, take the time to go talk to him, to go to something that he's doing.
Yeah, Dr. Lott's probably every definition of genius that you can have in there, that he can just rattle off all these things just with so much ease and construct such really well-framed arguments and talking points. Yeah, compared to just, will somebody think of the children? Yeah, I think we can close with a quote from Rob Allen. We have facts, logic, statistics, and reason on our side. They have penis jokes and legions of stupid.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
Talk to you later, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host at The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com. Stuff that grinds my gears.
You know, I'm an Android guy, right?
Yeah. You know, rub it in. I'm stuck with this stupid Apple thing, which is only really better for podcasts. That's really all it's better at.
So they came out with a smartwatch about 10 months ago or so. So it's May right now. I think I bought mine in July. It's funny. I've been wearing it now for almost a year, and I've had maybe 3 or 4 conversations about my watch. Well, Apple's watch gets released, and suddenly 14 times in a week, I get, hey, is that the new Apple Watch? Hey, is that the new? And this isn't like random people I'm seeing on the street. It's people who I have seen every day for the last year while I was wearing the watch.
So they wouldn't notice if you open carried either, would they?
Probably not. Unless Apple came out with a new pistol.
Oh, God. We better make sure that Apple never comes out with the iPistol because holy crap.
Oh, no.
Actually, you know what? All the hipsters would have to have one.
Yeah, that would be great.
Apple? The iPistol.
Hey, there you go.
No electronics in it, though.
Yeah, that would be bad. That would be bad.
I don't want to have to reboot my pistol.
No.
Because you know it's not gonna work when I need it. I'm gonna go. Hold on. I gotta reboot.
So yeah, this actually came up in a meeting a couple of days ago where somebody said, I've got a guy on my team is like a real Apple fanboy, and so this other guy was like, well, how can you two work together when he's such an Apple fanboy and you're like an Android guy? And I said, well, you know, in fairness, he gets to sample what Apple's going to see a year before all the other Apple fanboys get to see it.
That's not funny.
Yes, it is. Oh, it was pretty good.
It was pretty sad going from my Galaxy Nexus to an iPhone 5S.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, company said I had to have it.
Well, you know. So what about you?
Fake service dogs. I hate me some fake service dogs. You have no idea how much fake service dogs chap my butt.
I think we're about to find out.
Here's the thing. A dog is not a service dog unless it is trained to do specific work for you. The classic example is the seeing eye dog. Now, in my job, I have been to the seeing eye. The seeing eye is a place in New Jersey. It's in Morristown, New Jersey. And it's run by some very wonderful people who have been training blind guide dogs for like ever.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a dog from the seeing eye in Morristown, New Jersey, you have a guide dog for the blind. It's like the elevator. The elevator is a company that made lifts. Hoover is a company that made vacuum cleaners. The seeing eye is a group of people who train guide dogs for the blind. That is a service dog. If you're deaf and your dog is trained to get your attention when somebody rings the doorbell, or any number of other reasons that some dog may need to listen for you, that is a service dog. If you're a paraplegic or a quadriplegic and you have a dog that goes and picks things up off the ground for you when you inevitably drop it because gravity sucks, that is a service dog. If you have PTSD and you have a dog that is trained to watch you and intervene and knock you out of that loop, you have a service dog. If you're a whiny bitch and you cry whenever something goes wrong for you, and you have a little puffball that sits in your lap that you squeeze to make you feel better, you have an animated whoopee. You have a walking, pooping security blanket. That is not a service dog. Carry your butt. I don't care what kind of thing you put on it. That is not a service dog. And we had a lady here in Raleigh. Shows up from Tennessee. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Comes in from Tennessee and says, I want a hotel room. And the lady, and she goes to the news. They wouldn't give me a room. They wouldn't let me be in with my service dog. I have PTSD. This is my PTSD service dog. Well, come to find out, what really happened was she shows up to a hotel that was book solid with no reservation and says, I'd like a room. And they said, I'm sorry, ma'am. We are totally sold out. But let us call one of our other properties because, you know, hotels are a chain and there are multiple chains that are like one big chain, right? Let us call our other property. We're going to give you a pretty steep discount if you go over there. No, I want it for free. Caused so much trouble, they called the cops on her and told her to carry her butt. And though she goes on, it was my service dog. I have a veteran. I'm a veteran. I have PTSD. It's my service dog. Chances are she doesn't have a service dog at all. She has one of those hold me, squeeze me, pet me, and make me feel better about my life dogs because I'm going to whine about everything. No. If you have a service dog, we have legal obligations. The Americans with Disabilities Act was not written so that you could whine your way through life. The Americans with Disabilities Act is a promise to people that we will do what we can so that they can support themselves, so that they can have the dignity of work, so they can have the dignity of going to all of the same places that we do. It wasn't designed so that whiny bitches could complain and whine and bring their dog to the restaurant because they couldn't deal with their life. So put your hand in your back pocket and carry your ass. Well, that's our show for the week. Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music, and thank you for listening to the Gun Blog Varietycast. Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at seansorrentino.com and hate mail to wizardpc at gunscarstech.com. Show notes can be found at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode 38.